taping this conversation, and if any of you would like a copy of the MP3, just give me your business cards and I'll be glad to give it to you. First of all, Merry Christmas to everybody and Happy New Year. This is a time to reflect on the year past, but more importantly, to plan for the year ahead. I want to give you just very briefly my perspective about 2014, so that when we meet in December of 2013, you know, you can tell me whether or not I was right. Our mission is smooth leadership change. So we work at the CEO and the VP levels. We work at the partner levels in law firms. So we tend to work at the top of the house. And because we work at the top of the house, we're sort of like a leading indicator. When times are bad, we get to do more outplacement. When times are good, we get to do more search and coaching and leadership development. So we kind of see where things are going. And I would say that I have, since end of October, beginning of November, we've had more calls about search and coaching than anything else. And outplacement is going down. Now, that's one data point. A second data point is I tend to follow a company called Manpower. How many of you have heard of Manpower? Okay, it's the world's largest interim employment agency based in Madison, Wisconsin. It's a public company. Because they deal with interim employment, they're very sensitive to the economy. When the economy starts improving, who gets hired first? Interim employees. When the economy starts turning down, who gets fired first? Interim employment. So I tend to look at Manpower as a leading indicator. And what I do is I will look at it for the last 90 days, and I'll superimpose the S&P 500. And what I found was right after the election in November, Manpower started spiking up and has continued to spike up. And again, that's another data point to suggest that 2013 is going to be better than 2012. My sense for my colleagues, we have 250 consultants in 25 U.S. cities and in 23 countries. My sense for my colleagues is as follows. We tend to work with leading companies as well as non-leading companies, but the leading companies are basically saying things, the picture is now clear. You know, Europe is going to limp along, but it's not going to collapse. The United States has made its decision about who the president's going to be. We know what healthcare system is going to be. So it's time to start making plans. Am I saying that 2013 happy days are here again? Not necessarily. What I am saying is that the paralysis that I've seen in my clients for most of 2012 is going to start thawing, and that we're going to start seeing some action, hiring, decisions made in 2013 in Q1. So if I'm right, you heard it here. If I'm wrong, this conversation never took place. So that's a big picture. Let's look at the micro picture. We get involved with leadership. Leadership change, leadership development, succession planning. And I want to give you some ideas. But first, let's put it in some sort of context. I have an exercise for you. I would like you to take out a piece of paper, or I'd like you to take out a mobile device. And I want you to write down, I want you to think about the last 12 months that you've had in business. And I want you to think about one problem, one issue that you had during the last 12 months that still is vexing you. It still sticks in your craw. It's still something that's unresolved. It's something that bothers you. Could you have done something different? Why did it go that way? And I want you to write that down, and then as we talk, I want to go back over this issue that you put down. So some issue over the last 12 months that is vexing, sticks in your craw, problem, you wish maybe you had done something different, you wish maybe there was a different resolution, how could it have been done differently? And when you're through having written it down, it doesn't have to be in a lot of detail. This is only a note for you. I want you to just raise your hands just so that I know that you're through, okay? Who's done? Raise your hand. Okay. So that's, as we work with on succession planning, leadership development, helping to groom the next generation of leaders. There's a psychologist that I go to over and over again for wisdom and ideas and inspiration. How many of you have ever seen Cesar Millan, the dog whisperer, on cable? Okay. You know it's not about dogs, right? It is not about dogs. And you know that Cesar Millan is not training dogs. It's about humans. And Cesar Millan is training humans, not dogs. So wherever he says dogs, substitute the word humans. And here's what Cesar Millan says. Dogs, humans, are social animals. They exist in organizations, families, packs. They're acutely sensitive about who's got power, who's got resources. Some people have the resources because they are authorized to cut checks. That's easy. And some people have resources because they're going to influence those who can cut checks, and those are the leaders. What makes a leader, says Millan. And he says, calm, assertive leaders. How many of you have heard him say, calm, assertive leaders, right? He always talks about calm, assertive leader. And a lot of what we do at Stiebel Peabody is working with high potential people to teach them how to be calm, assertive leaders. Now, you can be assertive without being calm. Newt Gingrich, I'm not being political here, I'm just being descriptive. Newt Gingrich definitely was assertive, but not calm. Taken to its extreme, we call people who are assertive but not calm assholes, bastards, bitches, bullies. Has anybody ever met somebody like that? Somebody who's assertive but not calm? They are the bread and butter of the HR department, aren't they? They keep lawyers nice and busy. They know how to be assertive, they just don't know how to be calm. Now, how about people who are calm but not assertive? Well, and a good example of that, and again, I'm not being political, would be Barack Obama in the first debate. Very calm. And people who are very calm but not assertive are often called pushovers. How many of you have known people like that? And they're not leaders. Nobody respects them. And a lot of what Cesar Millan does in the show is he works with people who are frantic about their dogs, and they're no longer calm, and he calms them down. And he teaches them to be calm and assertive. This is very important in leadership. Think about when a client comes to you with a problem, the problem is a critical, vexing problem. What they expect is calm assertiveness from you. They expect you to say, this issue that's keeping you up at night, I can take care of this for you. It's not a problem for me, and we're gonna calm assertive. So how do you do that? So I'm gonna teach you a couple of tricks. Take out your pens, your pencils, your iPads, and I want you to write this magic phrase. Assets equals liabilities plus owner's equity. Assets equals liabilities plus owner's equity. Does anybody know what I just said? Does anybody know what that is? That is the basic, it's called the basic accounting equation. Every time you look at a balance sheet, that is basically what you see. Assets on one side, liabilities and owner's equity. If you do the math, you take your assets minus your liabilities, and what you got left is the owner's equity. This is the basic accounting equation. What I'm here to say today is it's more than that. It is your ticket to being a calm leader. Because your world is frantic. And they come to you and they expect you to sort things out. And this is the way to sort things out. And this is the way to guide you about what comes next, the basic accounting equation. The basic accounting equation is more than an accounting equation. It is also a statement about human beings. There are some people that bring value to your companies, and their idea about bringing value to companies is to bring in more revenue. In a law firm, they are called rainmakers. In many of your companies, they're called salesmen. In some of your companies, adding value to a company, maybe we're going to bring in better quality people, so they're called recruiters. Sometimes they're training and OD people. We're going to improve the performance of our employees. These are people wanting to bring value. Now, for people who live on the asset side of life, the world is full of opportunities. They are basically positive oriented in nature. God bless them. Now, then there's the other side of the basic accounting equation, which is called liability reduction. The way we're going to generate value is to reduce liability, reduce legal risks, reduce financial costs, make things simpler and easier to administer. These people who live on the liability side of life tend to be conservative, cautious, and risk averse. For them, the world is a dangerous place. You could get hurt. They exist in law departments. They exist in accounting departments. They exist in your quality control function. How many people know people like that? Okay. God bless them. We need those people. Assets equals liabilities plus owner's equity. Assets equals liabilities plus owner's equity. Now, let's calmly look at the implications about this. There was a company called Lehman Brothers. How many of you have heard of Lehman Brothers? Why did Lehman Brothers fall, and in its fall, create the Great Recession of 2008? Which has affected everybody in this room. Why did that happen? Very simply, the CEO was an extraordinarily aggressive, competitive kind of guy. Very much a sales guy. His goal was to beat Goldman Sachs. We're going to be the new Goldman Sachs. And he staffed his people with asset, people who focus on the asset enhancement side of life. And those people, like in risk management and CFOs and audit, that were on the liability reduction side of things, he either fired the best ones or he said, you're not a team player. And so the person eventually learned, shut up. Now, did he have a diversified senior management team? Yes, he did. He had men and women. He had blacks and whites. So from the diversity point of view, it was fine. The problem is everybody was on one side of the basic accounting equation, the asset side. So when people were coming up with these incredibly idiotic complex things called mortgage-backed derivatives, they just went for it. And the rest is history. Now, I've seen the other side of it just as well. Here's the other side. I'm the CEO. We're going to lay off 10% of our workforce. I want a diversified group of people to think about how we're going to organize this. We'll have our head of human resources, our CFO, and our lawyer in the room. So we have a diversified group of people in the room. No, they're not diversified. They're all focusing on the liability side. And so their idea of a good severance plan is we're going to provide the least costly severance benefits to employees. And we're going to evaluate it on did we get sued and how cheaply and how easily was it to administer. Very successful program. And then 6 months later, the economy improves and their best employees are all hitting the pavement because they got better opportunities elsewhere. And you go to glassdoor.com and you find the employees that have left have slandered the company and saying all sorts of negative things about the company. And you hear a rumor that your company is perceived to be the employer of last choice. Everybody doesn't want to go to your company. The only people that will go to your company are the employees who can't get a job anywhere else. Is that expected? Of course it's expected, because you didn't have a diversified problem-solving group to begin with. You loaded the dice on one side. So lesson number one for 2013 is when you have a team and you're composing a team, does your team represent both sides of the basic accounting equation? Or are you balanced just on the asset side or the liability side? I'd like you to go back to that vexing problem. And can anybody see where the lack of balance in the room contributed to the decision that you didn't like? Does anybody have an issue like that in their vexing problem? Yes? Would you be willing to tell us about it?
Comes down to a point of being less educated on one side.
I'm sorry, I don't think they can hear you in the back. Could you?
Well, we have too many Indians and not enough sheep to attack the problem that we have. Everybody's on the same side.
Yep.
Not ledger balance, but as being not educated enough on the other aspects of what we need to be done.
Okay.
Everybody's coming from the same angle, and we don't have any opposing views to equal it up or to get it done.
Another part of calmness and assertiveness is how do you phrase a subject? How do you phrase a subject? For example, you sell insurance. And it's very easy to go and talk about it from a negative point of view. We're going to reduce your costs. We're going to reduce your risks. Let's focus on cost reduction. That's what the clients want to hear. And so you get slotted as you're on the liability reduction side. And the problem is, if you want to be a leader, you want to be perceived as operating on both sides. The difference, in my experience, between a good lawyer and a business partner who happens to be a lawyer is that a business partner who happens to be a lawyer knows how to straddle both the asset enhancement side and the liability reduction side. A basically good lawyer only focuses on how do we reduce your liabilities. So one of the things you might do is go back to that thing I asked you, right? Assets equals liability plus owner's equity. And when you get a problem or when you're asked for a solution, say, let's look at this issue from two sides. The first is how does this increase our value as a company? And the second is, how do we reduce our costs? And how do we achieve the right balance? Because in your world, in insurance, you can help them reduce their costs to almost nothing at the cost of retention of employees and getting good ones. How do you achieve the balance? And that's what your business is. So as you talk, think about the basic accounting equation and then say, let me talk about this from the asset side, and then let me talk about it from the liability side. Here's why this is an important issue for HR. Most of the companies that I work with in this area of the world, HR reports to the CFO. And when it reports to the CFO, it takes on the coloration of the CFO and the finance function, which tends to be liability reduction. And after a while, HR has the same cachet as the controller of the company. It's the place where good ideas go to die. It's the place where we're always trying to nickel and dime and save money and reduce costs. It's never the idea where people get excited, enthusiastic. It's an administrative place. And that's what you're saddled with. And in order for your jobs to be fun, in order for you to remember why you went into HR to begin with, you need to recapture the asset enhancement side of your profession. One of the things that we do in our work is teach HR people how to build alliances with marketing and sales. If your only alliance is with the finance function and the legal function, you are going to be on the liability side, and that's not good. HR, done well, should straddle both sides of the basic accounting equation. Any questions, reactions to that? Yep?
I just want to take a moment and point out that not all the attendees here today are in HR.
Okay.
So just want
to all right. Yep.
What you're talking about seems to me doesn't only apply to HR. It applies to legal as well.
And
where you have, you have the business people and then you have the lawyers, and the business people are focused on profit. The lawyers are focused on something.
Absolutely.
Else.
I was just talking about HR because I thought this is a room with HR people, but it also applies to law firms, it applies to CPA firms, it applies to insurance. Next concept, again, calm, assertive leadership. What does that mean physiologically? Well, assertiveness means high levels of testosterone in your body. And yes, women do have testosterone. Calmness means low levels of cortisol. Cortisol is a hormone secreted by the endocrine gland, which creates the fight or flight syndrome. Do you remember that from high school? You know, when you have high levels of cortisol, your endocrine glands start pumping up. As the endocrine, you get very agitated, and you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, what we think about as calm, assertive leadership, the kind that Cesar Millan is talking about, is physiologically high levels of testosterone combined with low levels of cortisol. How do you do that? How do you achieve that? It turns out incredibly simple. Professor Amy Cuddy of Harvard University has been studying this issue, and what she found was interesting. She observed a handicapped race in Boston. And the person who won the race was blind. And as the person finished the race, broke the ticker, could feel the ticker, what did the blind person do? He went like that. It's the same thing you see in football, right? When somebody gets over the goal line, they go, right? This. I said, isn't that interesting? This blind person has been blind from birth. So how did she know to do that? Maybe there's a physiological way in which, by changing the muscles of our body posture, we communicate a signal to the endocrine system to secrete more or less of something, and that this means something. It turns out that chimps and gorillas, when they want to communicate power, they do this. And it turns out that when we want to reduce our power, We do this. We try to reduce our bodies. We try to make ourselves smaller. So what she did was, she took a bunch of Harvard Business School students. She took them in a room and she gave them a saliva swab, and then she measured their levels of cortisol and testosterone. And for some of them, she had them do 2 minutes of what she called power posing. Power posing. So a power pose would be like that. A power pose would be, in other words, you're trying to make your body bigger than it is. That's, or she would have them do this, which would be to try to make your body smaller than it is. And then she took us, after 2 minutes, she took another swab of saliva and measured it. And guess what? If you do a power pose, your level of testosterone increases and your level of cortisol decreases. If you do a powerless pose like this, your level of testosterone decreases and your level of cortisol increases. There, if you go on YouTube, there's an interview with General Colin Powell, and he talks about what it was like before he would go on to testify before Congress, which he found to be very stressful. He would go into the bathroom and he would look at himself in his general's uniform and wash his hands and begin to mumble, let's go shoot some pool, Fast Eddie. It was from a movie he liked called The Hustler, where Jackie Gleason was playing Minnesota, and he was basically replaying Minnesota Fats role and washing his hands. He was putting himself in a power position before he went to Congress. I had the opportunity to test this out. I was going for a sales call at a company, and like a lot of salespeople, what I do is I arrive at the company 20 minutes before the actual meeting is supposed to go. I'm in the parking lot of the company, and I'm checking my email. And I'm realizing as I'm checking my email, I'm doing exactly what Professor Cuddy said will decrease my testosterone level and increase my cortisol. I'm in the car, right? And I'm going like this, watching my emails. How many of you have gone to important meetings and right before the meetings, you're doing this? I said, well, let me try something different. So I put the device away. I went into the company. I went up to the CEO's office. I said, can I use the bathroom? And I go to the bathroom. Thankfully, nobody else was there. And I'm standing for the mirror, and I'm going, I'm doing this. And say, oh my God, I hope nobody comes in and says, if this is what he does when he pees in a pot, I wonder what he does when he stops at a red light. So I'm going like this. And then I go into the meeting with the president, and we talk about coaching and leadership development. And he says, how much do you charge? I gave him a number which was 20% higher than what I was planning to give him. He said, okay. And we talked some more. I went in for one assignment with one person at X dollars. I walked out with five assignments for five people at 20% higher than what I was thinking, simply by going to the bathroom and doing this. If any of you would like to have a copy of Professor Cuddy's research on this, I'll be glad to send it to you. Again, it's not my idea, it's a researched idea. When you think about it, the body is a system. How does change come about? Does it come about inside out, or does it come outside in? And what Cuddy is doing is basically says, you fake it until you become it. You fake it until you become it. That's what I do with my clients. I teach them to act and fake it until they get the feedback that it's working, and then they say, that's interesting, and then they actually become it. Fake it until you become it. This is not new. Shakespeare wrote Hamlet about 420 years ago. I'm not going to go into the story of Hamlet, but there's a scene in Hamlet where Hamlet is confronting his mother, and he says, "You are sleeping with the man who murdered your husband." And she says, "You're right, Hamlet. I'm nothing but a whore. What should I do?" And Hamlet says the following: "How about tomorrow you pretend that you're not a whore?" She says, "What? Yeah, why don't you pretend you're not a whore? Don't sleep with this guy." Okay? And he says, and then he says, "And the next day, why don't you pretend you're not a whore and don't sleep with the guy?" And then the next day, "Why don't you pretend you're not a whore? Don't sleep with the guy. And if you keep pretending, maybe you will become that." So Hamlet was saying that 430 years ago. Nothing has changed. If you're going to make change, how do you make change? You make change in the easiest way possible. You make change from the outside in. You make change with postures. You make change with body movements. You make change with verbalizations. Why? Because the body is a complex system, just like organizations, and everything affects something else. I change the posture of my muscles. That sends a signal to my endocrine system. That the endocrine system then sends a signal to my brain. Voila. I don't need to go through all the expensive and intricate things about changing my emotional pattern and changing my value system. Forget about it. We were talking about Laurence Olivier, my hero. When Laurence Olivier would start working for a character role, what would Laurence Olivier do? He would change his nose. That's what he would do. He would change his nose. He would create a new nose for himself, and then he would work from the outside in. Now that I got this new nose, what does it mean about me, and how do I change myself to be this character? So again, if you're going to make change in 2013, remember Professor Cuddy's work. Calm, assertive leadership is what you want to aspire to. You become calm, you become assertive in two ways. One, by structuring your conversations around the basic accounting balance sheet. Resist the temptation to only focus on the liability side. Also focus on how do we increase the asset, make things better around here, as opposed to just reducing the pain. Make sure you're perceived as doing that. What are you going to do in 2012? When you put together teams, make sure you have some diversification in your teams. By diversification, I'm talking about people who are thinking on the asset side and the liability side. If you have a team that's only thinking on the liability side, you have a bad team. Third, how do you become a calm, assertive leader? Being aware of your body position. Do some power exercises right before your meeting. Send a signal to your endocrine system about what you want. You want to be calm, you want to be assertive. There are things that you can do that don't require a lot of time, don't require a lot of money, that can help make this happen. Any questions? My best wishes to you for a good 2013 and a wonderful Merry Christmas to you.
Thank you.
If any of you would like a copy of this tape or any of the research that is that I've cited in this talk, please give me your business cards. I'll be glad to send it to you.
We appreciate that, Larry, and we would definitely like a copy in the chamber office.
Sure, and I've got your card.
And I don't know about anybody else.